How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is a special highlight. This was my headline talk with Paul Graywall, the Chief Legal Officer of Coinbase. This took place at Dublin Tech Summit a couple of weeks ago. And we talk about Paul's career as a judge before pivoting into tech. And we talk about why Ireland is perfectly positioned to be a global fintech hub. We also get some insights on crypto. This is my chat with Paul.
I know you can live up to the hype, but I'm not sure I can live up to that introduction.
It's not going to be easy, but we'll try our best, Gary.
That is phenomenal. Paul, welcome. I was going to say welcome to Dublin, but you're almost a local at this stage.
Well, I certainly spent enough time here in Dublin to feel like a local, even if I haven't yet quite earned that right. Thank you.
And you said one of the worst things ever. You said, I've never seen rain in Dublin.
I haven't. It hasn't happened once since I've ever come here. So hopefully today will not be the exception to that rule.
No. Give people, I'm sure people are familiar with Coinbase and yourself, but give people a kind of a quick overview of both yourself and the company.
Well, let me start with the company, which is something I love to talk about. Look, for those of you less familiar with Coinbase, we are a global cryptocurrency exchange and platform. We service over 100 million registered users around the world. Critically, many of those users and customers are here in Europe and in Ireland itself. We're a company that's over a decade old, which in many industries would make us the kid on the block. But in the world of cryptocurrency and digital assets makes us a bit of the old man on the scene. But we take a lot of pride in the fact that for over a decade now, we've grown the company and built the company in a very different way from some of our industry peers. Coinbase has been built on a foundation of trust, licensure, registration, and supervision in ways that we think have inspired confidence in not just regulators and policymakers that we are subject to, but our customers, which is really, really important. My own journey to Coinbase is a little over 4 years now. I came to the company with an interest and even an intellectual passion about blockchains, distributed ledgers, and the like. But my exposure to crypto came in a very different setting, Gary. Earlier in my career, I served as a federal judge in the United States for roughly 6 years. And while I can't prove it, I'm nearly certain that I reviewed and issued one of the very first search warrants in the United States for something called Bitcoin back in 2011 or 2012. So that was my origin story. And I'm just delighted that a decade or more later, here I am.
And how did you personally then get interested in the crypto space?
Well, I will tell you, when I was first presented with that application by law enforcement for that warrant, I did what any of us would do when presented with something we knew nothing about or had never heard of. I Googled it. And through that exercise, I discovered a very interesting white paper written by a very mysterious author named Satoshi Nakamoto. This was the original Bitcoin white paper. And in 6 or 7 or 8 pages, I was absolutely blown away at what seemed to be a very different way for thinking about how to operate computer networks and distributed ledgers and databases and the like. And even though I couldn't have predicted at that time that my journey would take me to Coinbase and take me to this place that we are all here today, I knew in some form or fashion I would want to make that part of my career and part of my future.
Had you been into tech before that? Was this kind of, because I think a lot of judges would have looked at that and went.
Yeah, I think that's a generous way to put it. But fortunately for me, I began my career as a trial lawyer and as a litigator in Silicon Valley in California. Many of my clients were the software and hardware companies of their day. And so I was always very much oriented towards technology and always very interested in how the rule of law and the application of law could influence the adoption and proliferation of technological innovations. And so for me, this has been a dream come true.
And what made you then leave what I think most people would say the pinnacle, becoming a judge? What made you then kind of go, nah, you know what, I'm going to take a hard left here?
Well, it's not a standard career path, that's for sure. And I've noticed that since I left the bench, there haven't exactly been a flood of others following.
You weren't the trailblazer.
No. The life of a judge in any country, whether it's Ireland, the U.S., or just about any other, is a pretty good one. But one of the things you experience, particularly sitting in a technology hub and center like Dublin, like Silicon Valley, is that you see the world taking shape literally before your eyes. And, sitting on the bench, I found myself confronted with two choices. Continue to call balls and strikes and disputes over patents and copyrights and other intellectual property issues antitrust matters, competition issues involving the technology industry, or take off the umpire's mask, as it were, and put on a uniform again and play the game. For me, that was a choice that really wasn't a very tough choice to make in the end.
Are you an early stage founder solving problems in the food supply chain? The Green Man Group sees the value in your work and has launched the Growing Further Awards to back your vision. These awards are designed to promote startups that are driving sustainability and innovation in key areas of the food supply chain, including production, distribution and retail, built environment, and customer engagement. Enter at growingfurther.io for a shot at a share of the €100,000 cash prize and the chance to pitch your company to a crowd of industry leaders. Don't miss out. The deadline for entries is October 4th, with final judging and the awards set for January 2025. Learn more and apply at growingfurther.io. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
Really? Because that's a big choice, like to go back and put actual skin in the game. What made you do that? Like, what was the deciding factor, or was there?
Well, I think for me, it was very clear that what was once viewed as, you know, a part of a broader, you know, business or industry was really becoming a business and industry unto itself. Technology, you know, used to be thought of as an add-on or as something that companies thought about separate and apart from their core competency. And yet, you know, sitting here today in 2024, whether it's social media networks, I happen to have worked at a social media company before coming to Coinbase, or digital assets, you know, these are now technologies that are so part and parcel of just about every business that every company is a technology company, I think, in large measure. And having seen that, having appreciated that, and thinking about, again, how can law and rules and standards influence adoption and hopefully influence the positive while minimizing the negative effects of those technologies, I just felt like I had to be part of it.
And what did you do? Because, like, you can't exactly go to Indeed or LinkedIn and go,
The opportunity to fill out an application on the website or you know, respond to a DM the way that many of us do when we see new opportunities. Now, look, it was for me fortunate that I had friends still in practice and in industry who knew of the opportunity that would be available to me to step off the bench and return to tech, and so I took advantage of that, and here I am.
Where'd you go?
First went to what was then Facebook. At a very interesting and challenging time in that company's history, both here in Ireland and in the United States. I joined the company now nearly 8 years ago when it was still enjoying a bit of the halo that it had from the very early days. And within a matter of weeks, in very short order after I joined, that halo very quickly extinguished itself, and we found ourselves in the midst of every regulatory litigation and policy debate globally you could imagine, whether it was Cambridge Analytica and data privacy, whether it was allegations of election interference in markets all over the world, issues regarding teen health and the like. All of these were very much viewed through a regulatory and policy and litigation lens. And so I cut my teeth, as it were, on those topics in some very challenging environments. And as hard as that work was, in many ways, it was the perfect preparation for the work I'm now doing at Coinbase to try to bring some semblance of rules, stability, and order to what has not always been a rule-based or standards-based or orderly environment.
I'm trying to work out if you've perfect timing or terrible time. I can't decide, because then you moved on to Coinbase.
Correct.
At a really interesting time as well. So when did you join?
Joined in 2020. And we were just at that point, I think, coming out of the most recent crypto winter, when it became clear that digital assets were going to be a thing and an important technology that was here to stay. I think this is my perspective, Gary, I'm sure you have yours, that before 2020, there was still an open question about whether this was a bit of a flash in the pan technology and the latest example of hype over substance. But I was fortunate to join at that time. And of course, as markets return, and then as the scammers, fraudsters, and hucksters also return, governments all over the world took a renewed interest in cryptocurrency. And once again, I found myself in a position of having to advocate for standards, rules, and laws, and engage in an effort to bring some order to a very disorderly situation. Mm. But I fortunately had the experience and training before that to be ready for it.
Yeah, it's funny how what you think is a bad thing at the time could turn out to be a blessing in the sky. Maybe not initially.
Absolutely. The things that don't kill us make us stronger.
So you joined in 2020. That was just the start of a massive run-up as well on crypto. So you were saying good in one way, but also bad is that it attracts a lot of bad actors. So what was your role within Coinbase then?
Well, the Coinbase I joined in 2020 was a very different company than the one operating today. We were privately held. We were largely U.S. focused, although by that time we'd begun to build out our team here in Ireland and grow our presence across Europe. But we very quickly became a publicly listed firm in the United States. We grew rapidly in terms of headcount and markets. And critically, I think for our global business, we came to understand that digital assets were a global technology and therefore required a global strategy. And so what was initially, I think, an experiment or a test here in Europe became a commitment. And that's when we started to really grow the presence.
Why Ireland? Why was this the choice to set up a hub?
Well, you know, a lot of U.S. origin firms, I think, looking at Europe and looking at the world are naturally drawn to Ireland for all kinds of reasons. For Coinbase, though, it was first and foremost about talent. You know, the fact of the matter is that crypto talent, even today, globally is in short supply. But I do think there is a critical mass of talent here in Dublin and in Ireland as a whole that is very attractive. But, you know, the main reason we were drawn to Ireland is that regulation here in Ireland and on behalf of all of Europe is very much in line with how we grew our business in the U.S. In the U.S., for example, we were the first cryptocurrency exchange to secure what's called a BIT license under New York law. That was a very important first step for us in developing a trusted platform that our customers would be naturally confident using. And as we looked around the world and we looked across Europe in particular, the reputation and frankly, the tough standards of the Central Bank of Ireland were a feature, not a bug. Perhaps for some of our industry peers, you know, a lighter touch regulatory approach was more attractive, but it really wouldn't work for us given how we'd grown the company elsewhere. And so we thought it was critical that we adopt a similar posture here, and Ireland was a natural place to do it.
It's very interesting because when you say banking in Ireland, a lot of the hangover from 2008. So it's actually interesting to see the things that have been done since then make it a good framework for international companies who are doing things the right way.
I think that's right. I think that, look, the standards can be tough. And I do think that understandably regulators here remember their history. And so it's important for U.S. firms, global firms of all type to, I think, approach that engagement with a certain degree of humility and respect for that history. But in many ways, it, I think, can and will serve our industry as a whole, certainly Coinbase, that if we can meet these expectations, if we can have standards in place for onboarding new customers, knowing who those customers are, monitoring suspicious activity on our platform, engaging proactively with regulators when we have issues, we can compete anywhere. And so it's a bit like training for a marathon or some other kind of athletic contest. You know, you got to put in the work in the gym. And I kind of look at our experience to date here in Ireland is putting in that work in this gym.
Okay, train hard, fight easy. That old adage from MMA. Talk to me then, how does Ireland differ from the U.S.? Because I know you're in the middle of a battle.
Yes,
in the U.S. So how does Ireland and so the EU broadly differ from the U.S.?
Well, if any of you happen to have caught my Twitter feed on occasion, you'll know that I haven't been shy about sharing some of our challenges in the U.S. I hope that we've been respectful and appropriately appreciative of the challenges of our U.S. regulators in overseeing this market. But the reality is, in the U.S. today, we have a broken regulatory situation and very little, if any, legislation from our Congress that guides and directs the regulators in ways that we think are productive. In short, it's been very challenging because The rules have not been set out in a particularly clear way. And many companies, certainly many companies in our industry, are aiming to do the right thing, but often find themselves at a loss as to understand what the expectations of the regulators and the lawmakers are. In contrast, here in Ireland and across Europe, with the implementation of MiCA coming quickly at us all, we have legislation at the EU level in place. Regulators like the Central Bank of Ireland, and to be fair, regulators all across Europe are now embracing that mandate and adopting standards and working with firms to make clear what requirements are going to be in place. And so as tough as those standards will ultimately turn out to be, and I do believe they will be tough, as they should be to protect investors and consumers, we at least have a playbook, a set of rules we can follow. And so I feel that the environment here is actually quite productive. Maybe Washington could take a lesson or two from that.
So why is that, though? Because we look at the U.S. as like the home of innovation, right? You look at San Francisco and Silicon Valley in particular as like home of innovation. Why have they been so slow to get involved with the crypto world?
Well, I think that unfortunately, in the United States, even to the present day, crypto and really technology as a whole has become an intensely political issue. It's strange to think about digital assets and distributed, you know, ledger-based networks as having a liberal or conservative bent to them, or for Democrats and Republicans to have different views. But in the U.S., sadly, like that has been largely the case up until the present moment. I do think, though, that things are changing in Washington and in the United States. We just saw last week, for example, major legislation pass our lower house that we think will bring great clarity to the U.S. market in a way that we're already seeing here in Europe. And I have to say, Gary, I don't think it is entirely coincidental that that has only taken place after Europe and other markets have shown they're not waiting around for the U.S. to get its act together, and that there's real global competition for this opportunity, and that if the U.S. wants to enjoy a certain position of preeminence in the way that it has in traditional finance and in other markets over the last 70 or 80 years, it needs to get its act together. And I think it is having a salutary effect.
I think Coinbase has walked that line beautifully between, you know, trying to push for good measures. A lot of the crypto world has adopted the libertarian mindset of like, we're going to stay out here in our own camp, whereas I think Coinbase have worked it beautifully to go, no, we're a proper company, we want to adopt proper rules, proper regulatory procedures, and you see the global opportunity here. Talk to me then about what could be improved, because obviously Ireland and the EU are quite good. Where is there still scope for growth?
Well, I think a couple of things are opportunities to improve for every market and in every country. One is, I mentioned talent. I think that for companies like Coinbase, the opportunity to hire the best and brightest and have access to the strongest talent will always be a top priority. And so policies and positions that support the development of that talent and the attraction of talent to Ireland are going to continue to be very, very important. And I think another opportunity is perhaps to, you know, not allow oneself to be distracted by the next shiny object or the next toy. I mentioned that we now have legislation in the form of MiCA here in Europe. It can, I think, be tempting on occasion to imagine that the work is all done and that we can move on to the next, you know, great technology opportunity or market opportunity. There's a lot of work that remains. And so keeping one's focus on the implementation, getting those standards right, making sure that regulators here, like everywhere, are properly resourced and have the subject matter expertise to grapple with very complex technologies and equally complex regulation is also important, so that we don't miss the opportunity that's been handed to us by this fortuitous kind of combination of events.
So crypto's had a wild ride in the last kind of like 10 years. Like, where do you see crypto now in its kind of life cycle in terms of like, we've had crypto winters, we've had bull runs. Where do we sit now?
Well, I think that is, you know, up until this point, a lot of the focus, the exuberance and maybe the irrationality, just a little bit, has been focused on crypto as a speculative opportunity, a chance to buy some tokens and hope the number goes up. Well, that's obviously still an element of this industry and of this technology, but we're very quickly moving beyond just digital tokens, cryptocurrencies as means of speculation to real financial services and products that can offer healthy competition to incumbents and traditional financial services providers. Credit products, staking and yield and rewards opportunities, opportunities to really drastically slash the cost of remittances for foreign workers looking to support family and friends back home. I think these real world use cases are emerging in ways that are very exciting. And beyond that, I think we're now starting to see crypto as a technology and infrastructure as opposed to an object unto itself. You know, our vision at Coinbase is that very soon in the future, millions and millions, perhaps even billions one day, will be using cryptocurrency technologies without even appreciating it. And once that happens, I think you're going to see much greater adoption, but also critically, much more real-world utility that everyone can benefit from. And frankly and candidly, our regulators and policymakers will insist upon.
I think we're not far away. I mean, the last time, I can't remember the last time we used cash. So we already have a version of us.
That's right.
I think COVID has sped that up a little. I think now, you know, we tap on our phone, that is a digital currency.
It's absolutely right. And the only question is, how do we do that efficiently and in a more cost-effective way? I don't think cryptocurrency will displace other financial technologies or even traditional financial services. I do think it can serve as an accelerant.
So you touched on it a little bit earlier in terms of the things that could be improved. So how can governments give clarity and stability to companies like yourself and to the broader kind of crypto space?
Well, I do think that the consultations that are already taking place under MiCA offer a good example of productive engagement with industry to understand where the pain points are, how to balance consumer and investor protection with promoting innovation. And so by and large, I think we are on the right track in terms of providing that clarity. But inevitably, Gary, you're going to see new opportunities, but also new threats emerge. And I just think that maintaining an open door is very important. It doesn't mean that industry is going to get everything it wants or necessarily most of what it wants. But I do think that understanding, you know, how these products and services are being built and what rules and standards can fulfill the mandate of the regulators, but at the same time, not kill innovation, is really, really going to be critical.
And in terms of the U.S., then, you've had a couple of wins in the last few weeks. Where would you like to see that go?
Winning is better than losing, that's for sure. I do think that seeing the legislation in the U.S. move through the full Congress and ultimately onto the president's desk for signature would be huge. I think that the other thing that often doesn't get talked about enough within the industry is that we need regulators, we need government in order for the industry to achieve its full potential. And what I'm referring to specifically is that we have to be candid and transparent that our industry has attracted too many scammers, fraudsters, and the like. And in the United States, for example, I think, you know, addressing these issues with industry competitors in the last year has been welcome and necessary. Our Department of Justice deserves a lot of credit for bringing a certain number of these more prominent individuals to justice.
We all know who you're talking about.
But, okay. I don't want to call anybody out, but I, for one, was not shedding a tear when I saw certain individuals plead guilty or be convicted. I think it's important that they be held accountable. And I think that, you know, governments, not just in the U.S., but all across Europe, all around the world, are important partners in that regard. And it's important that industry look at them as partners, even as there will be times when we have disagreements.
I think it's interesting because crypto is now becoming, you said it there, you touched about Coinbase, you know, 10 years, is now established. It's established as an industry. It's established as a store of value. So it's interesting to see, like, you know, similar hype cycles like AI now coming through. And there's always going to be that period of turbulence.
Yeah.
Whereas it kind of feels crypto and Coinbase are now emerging into the establishment.
Yeah, I mean, crypto and Coinbase are now wearing ties. We're dressing.
Look, I was surprised. I deliberately wore my runners. So, like, I won't wear a blazer. Paul will be wearing runners.
Yes. Well, thank you. I will say this. I do think that my dream, Gary, is for crypto and digital assets to become, dare I say, boring. I do think that day will come. But in order for us to become more regular, while at the same time maintaining that spirit of innovation, we just need to adapt to the policy environment, the regulatory environment, much in the same way as entrepreneurs and others adapt to the technology environments in which they operate.
So what's coming down the line? Let's look ahead for the next 12 to 24 months. What's coming down the line for crypto and Coinbase, Victor?
Well, I think there are several important milestones that lie immediately ahead that are important to keep in mind. And I'll focus on Europe, given our setting here today. Within the MiCA framework, there are a series of dates that are coming due where rules will come online and be effective. Most immediate are rules for stablecoins and standards for stablecoins. Euro or dollar-backed digital assets, I think, are a critical early use case for crypto. They feel real, they are real, and they deliver real value in ways that I think are critically important to our adoption. And so stablecoin regulation and adoption behind that, I think, are going to be really, really important. I think over the course of the next year, year and a half, you're going to see many more real-world use cases for crypto coming. And I do think the rules and regulations not only will permit that, they in many ways expect that. I don't think we are going to be permitted to live in a world in a year, 2 years, or 5 years where the only thing people find useful about crypto is making a bet on the price going up. And so my hope is that, as I said, we become more adept at offering cryptocurrencies and blockchains as tools for software developers and other technologists to build great products and services that matter to people. And you know, throughout the ups and downs of the policy and regulatory environment that we operate in, real builders, real developers are doing the hard work. And so, you know, I look at my job and others in the industry who share my responsibility as creating an environment that allow them to do that great work without unnecessary burden, distraction, or delay.
Paul, that was phenomenal. I think you've given us a great masterclass there in sorting the signal from the noise when it comes to crypto. Paul Grewal from Coinbase, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much.